Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah, the Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us for the second hour of the show on this fine day in America. We are, and should be, proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We'll start by talking with Colonel Scott Fisher and discuss the Officers Christian Fellowship, a group that supports all members of the military community. Then General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. Of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show my friend, retired Air Force Colonel Scott Fisher. He currently leads an outreach that I was involved with for much of my military service, and I still support, the Officers Christian Fellowship. Thanks for joining us, Scott. God bless you, bro.
Thank you very much. It is great to be back with you again, Denny.
Scott, start by telling us about your time in uniform. When and why did you join the Air Force? What did you do? Where did you serve?
Okay, yes. I entered the Air Force Academy at the young age of 18 years old in a couple of weeks. And after graduating from the Air Force Academy in 1992, my wife, Christy, and I served an amazing 27 plus years in the Air Force. We had a myriad of jobs, as most officers do. I was predominantly an F-16 pilot and served as an F-16 instructor around the world. And I also had the opportunity to serve 6 years doing congressional relations, both for the Air Force and the Department of Defense, working with both the House and the Senate for 6 years. And then I also served at a couple of embassies, including in combat areas such as Iraq and also in areas such as The Hague, the Netherlands. So it was a fabulous career. We were thankful for every moment of it, and most thankful for those with whom we got to serve alongside.
And you talked about you and Christy served. I presume Christy served because she was there to keep you out of trouble, not because she was also in the Air Force.
Absolutely. That is a great clarification. She was not in the military, but we had 5 kids, and with me deploying multiple times, be it to Korea or to Iraq, for a year at a time and many, many months over in some other areas in Southwest Asia and other locations. She very much served both taking care of the 5 kids and raising the 5 kids and leading them in studies, but also on her own accord as she poured into the military community, the spouses and the families that were around her, whether I was present or whether I was deployed overseas.
Yep. Our spouses serve. They don't get the credit for it, but they sure did serve.
Amen. Couldn't agree with you more.
And we salute the spouses that are serving now. They clearly deserve it. Okay. How did you learn about, hear about, get involved with OCF?
Yeah, I initially heard about Officers Christian Fellowship at the Air Force Academy. I had multiple friends in it. I was involved in another Bible study, one that incidentally I met my beloved bride, Christy, in during my senior year at the Academy. But it was not until pilot training at Reese Air Force Base where I first got involved with OCF together with Christy again. And we heard about it where somebody was coming up to some of the pilots who were going through the regular challenges of pilot training, including both students and instructors, and said that they had this group where we could gather together and study the Bible together and focus with this specific application. How does it pertain to our lives as military leaders? So I started back then at Reese Air Force Base, and it continued throughout the rest of our time in service. We either led a Bible study or participated in a Bible study at most locations where we served around the world, including when I was downrange and when I had very little other fellowship. It was amazing to be able to gather together with my brothers and sisters in arms from across the services and just focus on what we had in common, both in our passion for the Lord and wanting to lead as a military leader, but also as a Christian leader. And what did that mean?
I understand you totally, because we were very active in OCF once we joined. But when I traveled, and I was in Germany or somewhere for a week or 3 weeks or something, I could reach out and find a Bible study group that I could plug into for as long as I was there. That was a delightful opportunity, situation.
Absolutely. One of our key distinctives that we talk about is OCF for a lifetime. And one of the things that makes that possible is just the connectivity. And it has increased even from when you and I served in uniform. These days, you can literally just click online at OCFUSA.org and see how to connect. And you can find a Bible study wherever you're going, whether you're going to a location on temporary duty or whether you're going to be moving there. And there's somebody who can help connect you, not only with the Bible study, which is part of the core of who we are as OCF, where we focus together and gather together in local Bible studies for prayer and for studying the Word of God, which we hold to unapologetically because we believe that it's still has the power to transform lives, and it has the wisdom that we need to live and lead today. But you can do it with a click of a button. There are also homes where when you're just traveling around the world, we have hospitality homes, and you might only be there for a couple of days, but you can look up and see if there's a location where you can go and stay and plug in with somebody else who is wearing the uniform and loves the Lord. And so that connectivity is a huge part of what we try to provide the military member. And it's so critical because there's so much volatility, as you know, throughout a service member's life, both for them and for their family, as they move every 2 or 3 years around the world, or as they have to serve back and forth on different deployments, even while their spouses and families may stay back stateside or at their location overseas.
Yes, sir. You know, that was a huge part of Maryland's in my life. Okay, OCF is existence far before I joined it 50 or 60 years ago. Where did it come from? What's its mission?
Yeah, you're correct. So OCF USA, so the USA version of Officer Christian Fellowship, started in World War II in 1943. We just celebrated our 81st anniversary, so it predates both of us. And its mission is to engage military leaders in biblical growth and fellowship, to equip them for Christ-like service at the intersection of faith, family, and profession. What we find is so many believers often tend to think they have to either hide their faith when they're in uniform, or they live one way at, you know, depending upon who they're around, and then maybe another way when they're around other believers. And we try to teach how critical, which is not our wisdom, it's just out of the Bible, but that true, genuine faith has to be integrated through all aspects of your life. So we teach people basically how to do that, how to integrate their faith, how they can share, when they can share. Some people will say, hey, you're not allowed to share your faith when you're in the military. And that couldn't be further from the truth. Now, there are things that we accept by putting on the uniform, but there are certainly ways that we can share the truth and the grace of the gospel with those who need it. And many people don't realize it, but if you think about the civilians, the guard, reserves, everybody in the military, it's 2.9 million people that are serving in over 4,800 different locations in over 160 countries around the world. So OCF exists to equip and encourage those members wherever God may put them so that they can have fellowship, so that they can know that they're not isolated, and they can come together with other believers who love the Lord and love the nation, and they can talk about what that means in uniform to them and how to apply that during their time in service.
I agree with you, because I sure did that. And there's more to discuss about the Officers Christian Fellowship, and Scott's going to stay with us. It's now time to do some knee bends. Go about halfway down each time. Do 50, then do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. Scott and I will be right back. It's time to switch to Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you access to all three major networks. Keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support the First and Second Amendment, the sanctity of life, our military veterans, and first responder heroes. Just go to patriotmobile.com/frontlines. Get a free month when you use the offer code FRONTLINES.
The U.S. is more than $32 trillion in debt, a number that is going up by the second.
Meanwhile, our country faces expanding global threats while our military readiness is consumed with unnecessary engagements elsewhere.
If we want to be safe in the future, we need to get our debt and spending under control. Visit cvafrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Front Lines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Colonel Scott Fisher about the Officers Christian Fellowship. So this is an outreach, I guess, originally, based on the name of it, it was primarily by officers for officers. But today, I know it's for the whole military community, right? It certainly right. includes families.
Yeah, absolutely, Denny. And it has always been the intent, all the way back to the Articles of Incorporation back in 1943, that the purpose of Officers Christian Fellowship, while it was to bind military leaders together in fellowship, the real true purpose was to impact the entire military community with Christ-like leaders. So I like to say that we are not a ministry to officers, but we are a ministry through officers who, by God's grace, will impact the entire military community. That's very personal to me. I have one son who's an enlisted Marine and one son who is enlisted soldier. So my prayer is that Officers Christian Fellowship will have just as much an impact on their lives as they seek out what it looks like to serve the Lord and the nation as it did for Christy and I during our time in service.
That's totally logical, and it certainly makes sense, and that's certainly been my experience. And in addition to the Bible studies and those, particularly during the summer, but all the time, you have some things that are family-oriented, vacation-oriented. Talk about that kind of stuff, Scott. I know you do a lot of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have the joy of running two incredibly state-of-the-art conference centers, one outside of Buena Vista in Colorado on the backside of Mount Princeton called Spring Canyon, and one about 3 hours outside of D.C., called White Sulphur Springs in Pennsylvania. And both of them are absolutely extraordinary locations where singles, couples, families come together. They can be refreshed. They're taught from the scriptures and they're encouraged in their military calling. We have about 10,000 people a year who come through these two conference centers. And they come in, part of it is we strengthen military marriages. We equip local leaders for ministry all over the world. We develop leadership in cadets, midshipmen, and junior officers, and we reconnect military parents with children of all ages, really providing a home away from home. In the summertime, which used to be kind of the primary focus and still is a large part of where we do our ministry, but it's expanded so much again, where they truly are 365 days a year conference centers to pour into both our military members, but with spouses and the children and the youth of all ages. And for instance, at White Sulphur Springs outside of Pennsylvania, we have extraordinary youth programs where we had over 1,000 youth came through, some with their parents, and they can either do things that are only in their age appropriate, or we have opportunities where families can come through together. As families, you can worship together, you can eat together, and then you go about and do just extraordinarily fun type events, be it, you know, whitewater rafting, canoeing. We have high ropes courses at both locations. And through it all, we are pouring in what it means to love the Lord. And for many of these kids, they come back together every summer, and that is their time that they get to meet the same friends that may be all over the world because they also are military dependents. And so it serves truly as a home away from home. And for many, we call it a vacation with a purpose. And I should note that these conference centers are available not just to military families, but one of the best ways, if you are not military, that you can support OCF is simply by having your church group come and stay at one of these events. And if they come and stay, then not only do you get extraordinary services in a beautiful place just to be able to love the Lord and retreat, but that also supports military families because that's a way of investing into those conference centers. And by your attendance, you're actually helping us subsidize and bring military families in at a lower cost so that they can make use of the same beautiful resources.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And another thing that I've noticed from my time at both conference centers is you're not leaned on to suddenly, you know, if you're a young Christian or somebody just getting into this, you don't get pushed into anything. There's lots of opportunity, but you're not forced into anything.
Absolutely. No, we have people who are very, very well accustomed to working with youth. They know how to work with youth, and they recognize that youth come in all different places, and they're in different places in their lives. They're in different places of maturity, both spiritually and emotionally. So we are there to come alongside them and just walk with them. And it really is powerful. And out at Spring Canyon, we have those same family, which is the one in Colorado. We have those same family opportunities to come together and pour together, whether it's in the summertime, whether it's in winter retreats, fall retreats. You can set up your own family reunions at some of these locations, and you will never be able to surpass the beauty of coming together like at Spring Canyon. It is 100 acres surrounded by 360 degrees of national forest, and we will take you up there. And again, we go rappelling. We take junior officers and cadets and midshipmen where they can go whitewater rafting, rappelling, 3 days climbing 14ers. And then we have different ages, both a senior person such as myself and a junior officer who then can pour into them and talk about what are some of the real life experiences that we had? What did we do well while in the service? What could we have done better? And you just get to live life together, often for a week at a time. And it is always one of the most powerful opportunities. And cadets and midshipmen again and again tell us that it is one of the most powerful times of their time at the academies.
I believe that. But I was a 29-year-old major when I first started getting involved with OCF, and I became a Christian because of that. And I never felt pushed. So yet you're not pushing kids, but you didn't push adults either. I was attracted by what I saw, and I was welcomed as I elected to move forward. That was really good for me.
Absolutely. And we heard some of those same stories even now. In addition to having staff at the academies, which I'd love to talk about maybe in a bit, but we have staff at locations such as Leavenworth, where Army leaders come through typically for a year at a time. And we meet them again where they are, allow them to come in, allow them to engage to the degree that they are comfortable engaging. And then we challenge them to grow in their faith, challenge them to understand what does it mean to be a servant leader. Many people like to talk about servant leadership, but they don't really understand where that concept came from and how Jesus manifested it. So we do very practical applications of walking through the gospel, walking through Jesus's life and say, this is how he led. This is what it might look like when you go back out as a battalion commander or company commander, wherever it is, or as we have a leader who's getting ready to come speak at an event with us on April 12th called Impact the Nation at Museum of the Bible in DC. He was the former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO. So there is no higher command position in the United States military, since Chairman of the Joint Chiefs is technically an advisor position. So we have leaders that we engage with often behind the scenes at all levels of military leadership. And another example, and Admiral Scott Redd, who was also the first director of the National Counterterrorism Center, he talked about how OCF played a role in his life, both personally and family, but also in his professional life, starting from his time at the Naval Academy, but speaking to the Bible studies, both conference centers. And one of the things that he talked about was how instrumental OCF was in helping him develop a biblical model for leading a dozen different organizations, both in and out of government. So the scriptures talk about being wise as serpents, but harmless as doves. And again, we like to talk about how do you apply those scriptures in being both a Christian leader, but also a military leader, and understanding what that might look like wherever you lead, both during your time in service, but also afterward, where many of our military leaders continue to serve in public service.
Well said, Scott. We're about out of time. How can listeners learn more about OCF, or if they were find a prayer group wherever they are in the world? How can that happen?
Yeah, the easiest way is simply go to OCFUSA.org, and you can click on How Do I Get Involved? And from there, you can look up and you can find if there is a fellowship group where you are. I will tell you if there is not one where you are, because, and realize we focus on the volunteers. So sometimes as people shift in and out of an installation, you may come in at a point where there's not somebody there. If you're interested in leading a group there, we have all kinds of free resources that can make it very easy and less daunting for you to know how can you maybe lead a fellowship, and you can actually be a person who can help support someone else who's going to be showing up or is already there and is looking for that fellowship. Because as you know very well, Denny, it can also and often be very isolating leading as a Christian within the military. And it is so beneficial to be able to come together with other Christians who are serving in uniform alongside you. So OCFUSA.org, click How Do I Get Involved? And you can see the different prayer groups there that you can join. And it also will lead you to the conference centers and how you might get involved and join in one of the many retreats that we have there. In just 2 months this past year, we had over 800 cadets and midshipmen get involved in a retreat, and lives are being changed, and people are being come to the Lord. They are being discipled. They are growing in their faith, and they're learning what it means to be a servant leader and to serve like Christ.
And I know that you're a nonprofit, and you can use the money you raise to reach out to other people. How can listeners support OCF? OCFUSA.org?
OCFUSA.org. There's a button there that says donate now. And I will tell you, not a surprise to most of our listeners, but costs are rising, including at both conference centers and just to do ministry at the academies. And these young generations, despite what you might be hearing on the news, are hungering to come to hear the Lord. And we do need resources. We need new participants to come in. Even if you have had no military experience yourself, if you have a passion to see Christian leaders inside the military community, if you would join with us and click on donate now, and there's some specific ways you can give, or you can just allow the ministry to go at some of the places that we believe the Lord is most leading us, we would love your support and certainly need it.
Scott, thank you. Thanks for joining us today and for your continuing service to our nation and to our God. God bless you, brother.
Thank you very much. It is a joy and honor to continue to be able to serve. And thank you, Denny, for what you're doing. Blessings to you as well.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month that will open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM. Suppose you were forced to defend yourself or your family. This can happen to anybody, so it's important to be prepared. You will likely face legal bills. Even if you're in the right in a self-defense situation, there will almost always be an investigation and you may find yourself in the legal system. U.S. Law Shield is here to help you through these events. Experienced U.S. Law Shield attorneys are ready to defend you 24/7, 365. To sign up, go to uslawshield.com and use promo code FRONTLINES. Welcome back to Front Lines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And it is time for the Battle of the Month. So, of course, we're joined by General Chris Petty. Welcome, brother. Thanks for being back again and again.
It is my pleasure.
Chris, start by giving us a quick review of your time in uniform. You spent over 30 years in Mother Army.
Yeah, 31 years, active duty, lots of time in the National Guard, which was, you know, very active during these times. So, graduated from West Point, branched aviation, did all the cool aviation stuff, platoon leader, company commander a couple times, actually, battalion staff. And then I got really fortunate and took a battalion to Iraq during a surge, which performed incredibly during that difficult time. So that catapulted me to some other opportunities, brigade command, deploying units to Afghanistan and Iraq, and then chief of staff of the Colorado Army National Guard. That was interesting too. And then all of a sudden I'm offered a star and I go command the headquarters, NATO headquarters in Bosnia. And then I come back and do some staff time and Pentagon, which was fascinating stuff. And then out to NORTHCOM as a combatant command J3 guy. And here I am. Then I'm retired. I had enough. I wasn't going back to DC.
So you can't be retired until you get tired, right?
Yeah. I loved it. Just like you, it was fulfilling and rewarding and pretty much awesome. Recommend it to everyone.
Okay. And the battle of the month this month is the Battle of New Orleans. You want me to sing that song? That was a great song back then.
I was going to ask you if you remember the cadence. I remember running to the Battle of New Orleans. In 1814, we took a little trip.
Along with General Jackson down to mighty Mississippi.
Yeah, it's etched in our brains.
We took a little bacon and we took a little beans and we fought the bloody British in the town of New Orleans.
Yep.
Well, I've been paid not to sing, so therefore I won't go any further than that. So right. Talk to us.
This is a great American battle for a lot of reasons, and let me set the stage here. I always try to lead with why it's important. So this is the culmination of the War of 1812, the last real battle, and even though the war was over 2 weeks prior, the commanders on the ground didn't know it. So, I mean, this is still the culmination of the war. And historically for America, this really restored American pride. We had been sort of beat down over 2.5 years with not much success. The war wasn't really going well. We were kind of embarrassed. But Andrew Jackson restored American pride at the Battle of New Orleans when we trounced the British. So that's a big part of it. And also, it put us on the world stage as a true sovereign nation. Britain, from this point on, Britain respected us as a true sovereign nation, unlike they had done after the American Revolution. So this was a turning point. And of course, it catapulted Andrew Jackson to the presidency because he did so well and was such a popular mythological story. So this is Andrew Jackson, General Andrew Jackson, against Major General Sir Edward Pakenham, the British commander. Now, here's the summary of the battle. So Britain was fighting Napoleon in Europe. Yeah, you got to keep that in mind always because, you know, we can't look at everything through just the American lens. So it created a very heavy-handed trade restriction environment on America. And British boats were intercepting American boats and reducing commerce, et cetera, even pressing our sailors into service. So it reached a breaking point in the summer of 1812. Madison submitted to Congress a declaration of war. Remember we used to do that?
Way back when
in antiquated America, we used to actually declare war. So it's over 2.5 years now into the war. It's not going well for America. Lots of small battles and defeats. Even in August of 1814, the Brits burned the U.S. Capitol. Very embarrassing, you can imagine. And the Brits started turning their attention to the Gulf Coast, trying to now that Napoleon was kind of in retreat, they were adding some more resources. They were going to really punish America. So Andrew Jackson, who's distinguished himself by this time fighting Indians in Florida and Mississippi, was appointed to command because he knew something was coming. He assembled this ragtag, and I use quotes, you know, the American army. It's a truly American army. Here's why. There's regulars, there's militia, there's two brigades of free black men, and there's Jean Lafitte's 800 pirates in this thing. So this is such an American army. And he starts improving the defenses. 3 weeks later, British landed 9 miles southeast of New Orleans. Jackson was aggressive. He attacked their camp as soon as he found that they landed. So they knew this was real. The Americans were going to resist. They fought on. Jackson did some follow-on raids, and there was an artillery duel. Everything leads up to 8 January, the big British assault. And even though Pakenham planned supporting attacks, which were smart, they essentially just launched a direct assault into Jackson's prepared defenses, the famous Jackson Line. The Brits were covered by fog initially. That helped them advance, but all of a sudden, the fog lifted and they were exposed to an American force behind good defensive works. And this two-hour battle was just decimating for the British. They just charged head-on. You know, all kinds of interesting side plots and stories about units forgot their scaling ladders, had to go back and get them, all kinds of mistakes. So the Brits suffer 2,000 casualties to Jackson's 50. So the British limp away, defeated. Once again, this, quote, amateur American army beats back the professional redcoats. It's a fantastic American story.
It sure is. And it was also the last time American military and British military fought each other, the last time ever in history.
Yeah, that's an interesting note that I hadn't really thought of, but that I think is a true statement. So 8 January 1815 is the last time we shot at redcoats.
it was. And you pointed this out, the war was already over because in the Treaty of Paris, we'd agreed to end the war. But
yes,
for some reason, they didn't check their text, their email or their text. They didn't know the war was over.
Right. And this was the Treaty of Ghent. I just want to correct you. It was the Treaty of Ghent 2 weeks prior to the battle. But, you know, couriers and messages had to move by ship. And I mean, come on, it was a 2-month journey just to cross the Atlantic Ocean. So, yeah, they didn't know. And that's reasonable at the time. So both commanders thought they were fighting for advantageous positions in the war. And Jackson got the better of Pakenham, and the Brits gave up on controlling the Mississippi and cutting off commerce in the Gulf Coast of America. So, and of course, it ended the war. Interestingly enough, because of the slow movement of communications, the Battle of New Orleans and Jackson's victory became etched in the American conscious because the news of the victory of Jackson at New Orleans reached the citizens of the country at the same time that the news that the war was over. So it just planted itself in American psychology that this was the battle that ended the war.
And it just doesn't get any better than that.
That's right.
A battle and the war's over and we won.
Yeah, so he was really a hero. And of course, he was a president later. And so the rest is history. But yeah, fantastic American battle.
It is. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing the Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty. And Chris, we got just a minute, but talk to us a minute about Battle Digest, because that's something that anybody that loves American history, particularly military history, needs to know about.
Yeah, it's such a great product. I know I'm biased because I'm the author and publisher, but I tell you what, this is the easiest way to actually learn our important history. And let's face it, most of our history is military history. So these are the key events And Battle Digest is the digestible, simple version to understand all the key aspects of these fights and these campaigns. So it's a simple month. It's a quarterly publication. I mail it to my subscribers. They love it. It's like Christmas morning when they get their envelope. And I encourage your listeners to just check it out. BattleDigest.com. Pretty easy. BattleDigest.com.
I certainly recommend it. Chris, thank you. Thank you for your excellent review of some real history and for being a great member of the Frontlines of Freedom team. I'm proud we work together, brother.
Me too, Danny. It's always a pleasure. I really enjoy it.
I'm Colonel Danny Gill. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 64 this time? I want your Ranger ready. Then stand at ease.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Silver has increased 24% over the past 15 months and is a solid financial investment. Silver is projected to continue its rise and is nowhere near its 2011 high of $49 an ounce. So there's still a lot of room for investment growth. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. I do some coin collecting. Universal Coin was the dealer of the year for the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a great place to purchase silver and gold. That's where I buy. I encourage you to go to universalcoin.com. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Send your thoughts to me at frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Colonel, Navy Mom Monica is excited that President Trump is about to be re-inaugurated.
I join you, Monica. He's inheriting a horrible mess, but if anyone can turn our nation in the right direction, it's him.
And Marine Vet Sam wants to know why all the homeless Americans in North Carolina haven't been helped. Many are living in tents in the snow.
It's true, Sam. Apparently, our federal government doesn't care about them at all. And with the Los Angeles crisis, they're liable to stay ignored. We need, and they are about to get, some real leadership. And now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
On 21 January 1968, one of the most controversial battles of the Vietnam War began at Khe Sanh, 14 miles below the DMZ and near the Laotian border. Seized by our Marines a year earlier, the base was a staging area for patrols. The battle began with a brisk firefight. The next day, North Vietnamese forces overran the village of Khe Sanh, and their artillery fired on the base itself. An incessant barrage kept our Marines pinned down in their trenches and bunkers. During this 66-day siege, our planes dropped 5,000 bombs daily. The siege was finally lifted on 6 April. There's been much controversy over this battle, as both sides claimed victory. The North Vietnamese, while failing to take the base, claimed that they'd tied down a lot of our assets that could have been used elsewhere. We claimed victory because we'd held the base against their onslaught. It was a costly battle for both sides. 205 Marines killed and over 1,600 wounded. We estimated North Vietnamese losses between 10,000 and 15,000 men.
I was in the area then, a little further south in this fight. It was every bit as bad as they said. Okay, on 23 January 1968, 2 days later, the U.S. intelligence gathering ship Pueblo was seized by North Korean naval vessels and charged with spying, violating the North Korean territorial waters. Negotiations to free the 83-man crew dragged on for nearly a year. The Johnson administration vehemently denied that North Korea's territorial waters had been violated and argued the ship was merely performing routine intelligence gathering duties in the Sea of Japan. Some of our officials believe the seizure was part of a larger communist bloc offensive, since exactly 1 week later, communist forces in South Vietnam launched the Tet Offensive, the largest attack on that war. Fully occupied with the Tet Offensive, Johnson resorted to quieter diplomatic efforts to resolve the efforts with North Korea. In December, the Pueblo's commander, Captain Lloyd Bucher, grudgingly signed a confession that his ship was spying. With this propaganda victory, the North Koreans returned the crew and the captain to us. The crewmen's reports of their horrific treatment by the North Koreans further incensed our citizens, many of whom believe that Johnson should have taken more aggressive action to free the captive Americans.
And on 24 January 1972, after 28 years of hiding in the jungles of Guam, local farmers discovered Shoichi Yokoi, a Japanese sergeant who was unaware that World War II had ended. Guam, a 200-square-mile island in the Western Pacific, became a U.S. possession after the Spanish-American War. In 1941, the Japanese captured it, and in 1944, we retook Guam. It was then that Yokoi, left behind by the retreating Japanese, went into hiding rather than surrender. In the jungles, he carved survival tools and for the next three decades waited for the return of the Japanese. After being discovered in 1972, he was sent home to Japan, where he was hailed as a national hero. He subsequently married and returned to Guam for his honeymoon. His handcrafted survival tools and threadbare uniform are on display in the Guam Museum in Agana.
I wonder if they gave him back pay for those three decades.
I would hope so, but yeah, that's quite a honeymoon.
On 20 January 1981, minutes after Ronald Reagan's inauguration as our 40th president, the 52 U.S. captives held in the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, Iran, were released, ending a 444-day Iran hostage crisis. On 4 November 1979, the crisis began when militant Iranian students, outraged that our government had allowed the ousted Shah of Iran to travel to New York for medical treatment, seized our embassy in Tehran. The Ayatollah Khomeini, Iran's political and religious leader, took over the hostage situation, refusing all appeals to release the hostages, even after the UN Security Council demanded it. 2 weeks later, the Ayatollah began to release all non-U.S. captives and all female and minority Americans, citing them as among the people oppressed by our government. The remaining 52 captives remained at the mercy of the Ayatollah for the next 14 months. President Jimmy Carter was unable to diplomatically resolve the crisis, and on April 24, 1980, he ordered the disastrous rescue mission in which eight U.S. military personnel were killed and no hostages rescued. In November of 1980, Carter lost the presidential election to Ronald Reagan, and on Reagan's inauguration day, the hostages were released. I was the Mideast war planner during all of that, and our response to all that was terrible. And that's military history for today. What would you do if you were forced to defend yourself or your family? These situations can happen to anybody, but it's important to be prepared. In addition to being the worst day of your life, you can face a large amount of legal bills. Even if you're in the right in a self-defense situation, there'll almost always be an investigation, and you can find yourself in the legal system. It's the way the law works. This is why U.S. Law Shield was formed. They're here to help people through events who never thought that would happen to them. With their Legal Defense for Self-Defense program, experienced attorneys are always ready to defend you 24/7, 365. To begin your membership today, go to uslawshield.com, use the promo code FRONTLINES. And now it's time for Self-Defense Report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, in the early hours following Christmas Day, a tragic incident unfolded in Madison, Indiana, when a homeowner reportedly shot and killed two intruders. The Jefferson County Sheriff's Office received a distress call at 3:48 a.m. from a distraught homeowner. Upon arrival, deputies discovered the bodies of Dalton Keith Skirum, 27, and Abdel Adam Skirum, 29, both of whom were brothers and residents of Madison. Their past records revealed that Dalton had received multiple charges related to theft and burglary in 2017 and 18. The homeowner reported that several days prior, another break-in of his garage had occurred, so he installed video cameras. The investigation is ongoing and no charges have been filed so far against the homeowner.
Thanks, Colonel. I did some research and discovered that Madison, Indiana is a very rural town in the extreme southern part of the state. Madison is a close-knit community of just over 10,000 residents. So you might ask, why does that make a difference? Well, it's simple. Because the homeowner shot and killed two brothers, and it's quite possible that he knew them and their relatives. It's likely that not everyone in the community will sympathize with the homeowner, but may judge him because of it. One of his neighbors who went to school with the two brothers expressed sympathy for both of them. In my opinion, based on what I know to be true, the homeowner was totally justified in killing these two men. Nonetheless, that doesn't make it any easier for the community or the man who shot them. It would have been easier to deal with if the two men were outsiders who'd come in from a distant city. They would have been perceived as outside invaders, and the homeowner would have been hailed as a hero for protecting himself and the town. Instead, some are seeing him as a man who shot two of their own. And now the homeowner, even if he's not charged, will have to face the scrutiny and judgment of at least a few of the residents who knew and loved the criminals. Don't get me wrong. It's not fair to put a homeowner in that position, and I do sympathize with the man, but I'm just saying that he has some rough days ahead. Many times after a shooting in your own home, the homeowner is forced to clean up the blood and the mess himself, and then afterwards, he never feels safe in his own home again, or he constantly relives the event every time he enters his home. Quite often, people who experience this quickly sell their homes and move to another town just to escape the memories and give themselves a chance to start fresh. Even though this was a sad state of affairs, the homeowner did what he had to do, and he was justified under the law. So Frontlines of Freedom wishes this homeowner all the best as he gets on with his new life.
Well said. Our movie of the month is Second Life. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. I'd appreciate getting your comments to the movie. Send your comments to me at frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, Steve Gorham will discuss our nation and energy. Then Colonel Steve Kenyon will share about helping Israel. Gold Star Dad George Lutz will present Honor and Remember, and Diane Raver will present the movie of the month. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And it's now available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the Frontlines of Freedom. Dismissed.